Gosh, this conference will.
I enjoy talking about money because it's a hot topic. It's one of those little topics that trigger all sorts of responses. So let's kick off and just have you guys tell me. I mean, just tell me what's going on for you. Just think of the word money. What's the first thing you think of? Come on, get off, take yourself off of mute and give me a word, give me a concept, give me how you feel about it. Let's go from the field. You guys tell me what goes on in your brain when the word money comes up. Not enough. Go ahead. Not enough. Okay, go ahead. Next. Who else?
Freedom.
Freedom. Okay. Freedom. Who else?
Fear.
Fear? Okay.
Uh-huh.
All right. Fear. Great. Who else? Money. Money, money, money.
Great.
Greed. What else?
Most of the things I hear from people, well, I can't make money off of someone.
Okay.
Security.
I want to know what you think about the word money. Security. Okay. What else?
Have some fun.
I need to get more.
Need more. Okay. What else?
It's getting in shorter supply.
Shorter supply. Okay. What else? Money, money, money.
Opportunity.
Okay, what else? Money, money, money.
Opportunity. Residuals for retirement.
Residual, okay. What else?
Money to go do things and have some fun.
Yeah, fun, yeah, fun. Okay. Okay, good. Good shares, you guys. Okay, and I got some of you to speak up. Some of you are sitting back there going, rawr, 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 rawr. And that's okay, too, because recognize where you went with the word money. Where
love,
did
hate.
You go with the word money? What?
Love, hate.
Love, hate. Okay, there you go. All right, so if you heard everything that just transpired on this phone call, you get what goes on in our minds and in our society around that famous word called money. You know, if I took that list of people, some of you called it freedom, security, fun, opportunity, residual for retirement. Those are the good words we heard. But we heard more negative words than we heard good words. We heard not enough, fear, greed, I can't make money off of people, need more, short supply. Notice the lack versus the abundance, the lack versus abundance mentality around it. And that is true about our whole world. We have a majority of people that have a scarcity or lack concept around money. When the word money just pops up, the first thing that comes to them is not enough or shortage or scarcity or we don't have, you know, or it's evil or it's, you know, to be greed or, and it goes into that negative direction. If that's kind of where your brain kind of went in that direction, don't take out a hammer and hit yourself. Just go, aha. I want you to just recognize what a big aha moment that is for you. Because that's what we call about some of the programs. Of course, my, you know, 5 minutes of playing with you around this is nothing compared to the deep-seated nature of what, how some of these programs infest us. But see that it just by you throwing that word money out there, all the different responses you get. And the programs that we carry around the word money. It is the number one issue that has the most programs, in other words, beliefs around it, of any item. I mean, we have more relationship issues around money than any other aspect of life. It's huge. So money is a huge word. It's a huge, and you're going to see today how what a roadblock it is in people's lives and how it stops us and freezes us and causes us so dismay, so much dismay in our lives. Money as a concept overall, if we look at our population in the United States, 97% of our population work for 3% of the people. Now, some of you know this statistic already because you've done some research around Robert Kiyosaki's books about cash flow quadrants where he talks about the employee and the self-employed quadrants on the ones that are exchanging time for dollars, and then you have the business and the investors, and that 97% of the people are on one side of that box and 3% are on the other. Your business owners and investors are 3% of our population, 97% of them are working for that 3%. So you see how the concept of money can develop that scarcity versus abundant analysis is if all you do is spend every day of your life working to try to earn enough money to pay the bills by the end of the month, you're going to have a lack mentality around it. And that's 97% of our population. We're working to make other people wealthy. Other people are using leverage as a concept are doing it incredibly better because they're leveraging off of what they have, whether it's time, money, whatever, assets, whatever, to make more money. In the 2003 statistics, and that's where this data comes from, only 4% of the population ever achieves a six-figure income. I think that's a little higher today, but not much, because as we know, our income levels in this country have not grown hardly at all. The people at the top 1% have increased their income in a gigantic way, whereas the average person, the 95% that make less than $200,000 a year, have not grown much in their income over the last 8 years. So there wouldn't be much of a change in that statistic. Struggles with money issues cause people to sabotage themselves, and that is the number one area where we have self-sabotage. We know statistically in divorce proceedings, you can look up these statistics on the internet, and you're going to find that the number one cause of divorce in our country today is over financial issues. It's about money. So how huge is this issue? I want you guys to really get this, how critical the issue of money is in our society today. And it plays that role, it struggles, so it's not just about marriages, but it causes issues in relationships with family members. How many people have stopped talking to a family member over some monetary issue, something that happened about money? And it just has that controlling influence over people's lives. And if we look at money and the way it impacts people, it's really incredible. I think one of the most intriguing statistics is when you look at people who win the lottery, and they've had lotteries around now for, almost 20 years, and they're saying that they go back and they did a statistical analysis of all the people who won the lottery, and the majority of them, a great percentage, and they didn't have the exact percentage, but it was like 75, 80%, somewhere in that neighborhood. I mean, huge percentage of the people, 5 years after they make all that money in the lottery, they're back to where they were or lesser than where they were before they won the lottery. Now, that's an unbelievable statistic. Why is that? Because we mentally have a relationship and an attitude towards money in our life. And just because we get more doesn't change our attitude. What we need to do is what? We need to focus on working on ourselves to change the attitude first. The attitude in and of itself will cause you to lose money or gain money or settle back down. You will be in a posture where if you believe your value is $60,000, you will never make more. You'll always kind of be right at that level because our brains and our focus and our attitudes and belief systems so much control the net results in our lives. And that's what happens to these lottery winners. They're people that grab onto this money. And some people argue, well, Mary Jo, that's because those people don't have money management skills. And I go, are you kidding? The majority of the people that win the lottery money aren't that they don't have money. They hire financial assistants to help them invest. But they get taken advantage of and they make other decisions. And just because you hire a financial manager doesn't mean that you allow them to take control of the money that you have. These people go back to their financial managers and they take all the money out that they had invested at one time because they want more, because it's there to be had. They hire people for money management, but the bottom line is they have this certain water level in their life, value level of what their worth is, and they somehow settle back into that worth line. Now, I kind of compare it to that old concept of if you take a bunch of fleas and you put them in a jar and you seal the top and you watch the flea with holes in it. So the fleas are jumping up and down, and the intriguing thing is when they go jump up and down, they only go as high as the top of the lid because the lid is, it doesn't allow them to go higher. Well, you leave them in that jar for long enough, you come back, you unscrew the jar at top and you take the top off, and you know what the fleas do? They jump at the exact same level because they're kind of stuck in that, what we call our comfort zone. It's the zone of, and I call it the knowledge zone. That's all they know. They've been trained. It's the same thing with an elephant. When you tie an elephant, you know what they do in the what they did in the circus and places throughout Africa. What they do is when they capture elephants, they get the baby elephants and they tie a rope around their leg and they put a stake in the ground. And so when they are little, they try to, you know, they maneuver themselves and they see how far they can go away from the stake, and they learn that they can only go so far. Well, 1 year later, when this elephant is twice the size, that elephant could pull that stake out in 5 seconds flat. But it's trained that that's its comfort zone, and that's as far as it goes. It doesn't even realize it has total freedom because of the psychology behind it. Same thing happens to us with money. We get stuck in that money concept about what we're worth, what the value is, or we get stuck in a concept of there's not enough, scarcity, money is greed, I can't make enough, there's not enough to go around, fear around it. All these things are they're principles and belief systems that keep us stuck. So we look at, if we look historically and say, how did we develop these? I mean, where do these attitudes and belief systems come from that tend to make us stuck on the word money? And the first place we look is, who are our role models? And your number one role model is your parents. What were your parents' beliefs? And if I go back in my life and I look at my parents, well, they were depression mentality. You know, a lot of us came out of that background. My parents were penny pinchers. My dad he got a letter in the mail. I'll never forget as a kid watching him get those letters in the mail. If the post office didn't stamp over this postage stamp, he'd get out that tea kettle and get that steam coming, and he'd steam that postage stamp off that envelope to reuse it. We were famous in the Lau family, that's my maiden name, for reusable duct tape. I mean, man, we'd have duct tape that had been on at least 8 different things. We didn't throw duct tape away until it had 0 stick left. I mean, it was just all that. I'm telling you. So all these things, and I could go on and on and on, and I'm sure a lot of you on this call can tell me incredible stories as well. But we had this real concept around value and money and not to waste anything. It was like so tight because things were so precious. Every penny was precious. We were taught as little kids to start a savings account. I think my savings account started when I was like 5. And then go out and work, and you know, we also got the concept of work hard. You know, you work hard and you make money, and that's what you do. Your relationship with money is you work hard for it all the time. You just work harder and harder and harder, and you make more money, and that's going to help you, you know, get what you want in life or what you need in life. So it was this concept that, you know, all these issues and relationships with money and the way my mom and dad, that became part of who I was as a poor person. Why? Because that is what transpires. We as the people, we take on our environment. Our role models set up for us how we operate thereafter. And that's what we've done. So if you look at your parents and you look at how they raised you, you can see where did your attitude and belief systems arise around money. And some of those attitudes are, you know, rich people deprive the poor. Wealthy people are bad. The rich are greedy people, disconnected from love. Money is the root of all evil. These are just thoughts. These are concepts that were bred. Where else do we see them come up? We see them in the media. I love to tell the stories about the different TV shows we watched when we were kids. I mean, I remember Gilligan's Island and MASH and Beverly Hillbillies, some of those shows. And every single one of them had depiction of rich people in a negative way. Every one of them. They all showed rich people in a negative way. They wouldn't show pictures of philanthropists and tell stories of the incredible, you know, gifting programs people have. That wasn't new, because that wasn't, you know, it was fun for us to pick on people. We want to be able to pick on people and pick on people that have things that we don't have. It's part of our human nature, and that's what the TV shows, you know, just reflected for us. Our ability to judge other people, and they had to be bad. They were wealthy. That made them bad people. So you develop this mentality in your brain that people who have money aren't good people. So if you have that, and you have that relationship around money, the big issue becomes for you, how are you ever going to accrue tons of money in your life when inherently inside of you, you say, rich people are bad? It's just it's a horrific thing. It's like the greatest roadblock we can put in our lives for ourselves to cause us to stay stuck exactly where we are. So if you look at your current financial status and you think rich people are bad, you can look at your financial status and say, that's why you are where you are. you are being controlled by your belief system and your programs around your relationship with money. So we need to correct that relationship before you're ever going to move forward, because that relationship is what freezes you in the position you're in. The other aspect is, a lot of people think that people who are prosperous, who have a lot of money, can't have a good spiritual walk. And oh my gosh, there are some incredible people. And the reason you might believe that is maybe you're not around those kind of people. Maybe you go to a church where all the people in your church have scarcity mentality. I've got a big scarcity mentality church that I attend, and I work so hard at opening people's eyes to see it different. But, you know, there are people out there that are multi-millionaires that are doing phenomenal things in this world, that have incredible walks with the Lord. It's just, you know, to see them, and, you know, you can just list them off the top of your head. You see them on television, some of the great evangelists, you know. I mean, all these people, they're multi-millionaires, but they have incredible walks with the Lord. Billy Graham is a multi-multi. I mean, oh my gosh, the guy's got wealth extraordinaire. But, of course, he gives most of it away, but there's a guy that has a phenomenal. So there's no relationship. You can't say that you can't be both spiritual and prosperous, because that's not true. It's just something that we've used to rationalize our poverty, or our vow of poverty that we've cast upon ourselves, because somehow if we're poor, we can have a closer walk with the Lord. Wrong. There's another belief that needs to be shattered in your life. So abundance is exactly what the Lord actually has for us. I love to give those trainings on abundance, and some of you have heard my tapes that DupliPack sells regarding abundance that I did for my church. I did a couple seminars on it, and it's just wonderful about how Scripture tells us the Lord wants it to be abundance. John 10:10, you can start with that one. But that's abundance is, from abundance you can create love and compassion and everything else. But I'm going to tell you, my experience around wealth and money and income is that, you know, when people become very wealthy, all it does is augment their inherent characteristics they had when they weren't. Isn't that intriguing? So you can take somebody you can have a person that has no money who has tremendous greed in their life, and when they get money, they're going to still be greedy. Or they're very judgmental, or they're not very caring and compassionate, or they don't have a walk with the Lord. When they get tons of money, that all that's going to do is add exclamation marks after each one of those characteristics, because money just allows those characteristics to be played out in a greater sense. So you can watch and see what people's walks are by just watching what they do when they accrue great wealth. But great wealth is a great thing to have, because, you know, as I tell people, I always, you know, I do a lot of seminars, and when people tell me, and they go, well, the Lord gives me everything I need, Mary Jo, I'm totally satisfied. And I go, really? I said, you know, so everything you have, you're set. And I said, yeah, how much money do you have in the bank? Oh, not very much, but I don't need much. I can live. I have all that I need. And my next question always is this: does your next-door neighbor have all that he needs or she needs? Do the kids in the orphanage down the street have all that they need? The concept that the Lord provides me all that I need and I'm satisfied and I don't need to have any more is a concept I think is a very selfish concept. I agree that the Lord is our provider, but I also agree that we can work harder and we can do things differently and we can be more effective around the concept of money so that we can make a better life for other people, because that's the purpose I think we're all here for. Not about us, it's about making a better life for other people. Because there are always going to be people worse off than you, no matter where you are in life. And to be able to be in a position to make life better for other people and be a difference in people's lives, really, truly, I find the most exhilarating part of being here on Earth, and why we're here. It's why we're in Manatech for many of us, because we want to make life a better place for many people. So the idea is that, how do we do that? Well, it's harder. It doesn't mean without money you can't make life a better place for many people. We pour into people's lives with or without money every day. But I suggest to you that if you had $1 million, as I asked this person who tells me they have enough, I said, if you had $1 million, could you do more for God's kingdom? And they can never tell me the answer to that, no. It will never be a no, because $1 million can do a lot more for God's kingdom. So it doesn't mean it's any more valuable or less valuable than what you're doing today, but you could do a lot more. So if we have the capacity, which we're all gifted, to be able to create money, but we allow our relationship with the word money and our belief systems and our paradigms to stop us, is that not a behavior that doesn't serve us? Absolutely. You're freezing yourself, you're locking yourself down, you're keeping preventing yourself from being all you can be and creating all those results that, you know, that are lying in your path, that you, are possibilities for you. So again, understand that abundance and spirituality, there, to me, there's abundance is spirituality. The whole concept of abundance is a spiritual concept. And that's what makes it so different than the word money. And we're going to get into that. What, you know, understanding there's a relationship. Money, abundance, prosperity are three distinct concepts. And abundance is that is a depth of a spirituality. People mostly work with money because it's something they can hang on to and grab onto and hold. But it's all it is really paper. It's paper. Abundance is the spiritual concept of, you know, just living that life with abundance. If you look at scripture too, a lot of you are scripturally based, you know that it's money is not the root of all evil, and that is so mistaught so many times or misinterpreted or in our childhood that we get the idea that money is the root of all evil. It's the love of money that is the root of all evil. Like I said before, money is in itself is just neutral. It's neither good or bad. Some of you on the call are going, oh, Mary Jo, money is really good. And I go, I get it. Money is, you have this concept, money equals good, but I'm telling you that money can equal evil. It's just as easily, if not more readily, than money equals good. The concept of money in and of itself as a standalone item is there's no value judgment around it. It is just paper. It's neutral. It's neither good or bad. It symbolizes our ability to exchange goods and services. So I read an article over the weekend about this gentleman who does seminars on teaching people about their relationship with money. And one of the leading things he does in his workshops is he talks about people, about their ideas. Because we have so many issues around money, okay, let's break out in groups and let's talk about how do we replace money in our society. And he allows in these workshops for people to just, you know, brainstorm with different groups about how do we get rid of money out of our society? How do we get rid of it? And people come up with suggestions like, you know, maybe forming a system of a bartering system and then they have a problem with keeping track of all the exchanges that take place. And eventually they, as he says, does this all the time, they all eventually come back to the need we have for some kind of monetary system in our society. And the power of going through that kind of exercise with people is the fact that when you do that with people, they get the idea that the principles of having a monetary system are valid and sound. So it's not money that's bad or the principles of a monetary system. What needs to change is then what? Their thinking around money. Your relationship towards money needs to be transformed. Not the concept that money exists, because money is absolutely always going to have some kind of exchange system, monetary system, that's going to help us with exchange. So we look at our energy around money. What is our energy around money? What is our, are we attracting or repelling? And as we look at this attraction and repelling of money, we look at the concept of what we saw in The Secret. Some of you remember we looked at the law of attraction in there. And what is money to us? But let's go and look at money itself. We have people that are focused on money. If you focus on money, I believe you lose sight of what it really is truly all about. The focus should never be on money. We can have goals about how much money we make, but the focus isn't on the focus on the goal in terms of giving us a direct target to hit is one thing. But the idea is, why do we build vision boards and dream boards, and why do you have the personal vision statement and the pictures and all? Because it's what is the money going to result in? Money in and of itself doesn't result in anything except a lot of dirty paper. You make choices around what that's going to look like for you. So what we need to do is get focus off of money and focus and get sight on the deeper purposes that we have. And it's the deeper purposes that really drive us. It's not money in and of itself. It's the deeper purpose. What is the purpose behind it? What are we going to do differently? How are we going to affect change? What is going to happen differently in our life? Because if you look at money all by itself, it has virtually no vibration. You know, energetically, it really, all it is again, a convenient method to exchange goods and services. So I can say, hey, I like money. I have a great relationship with money. I like earning it. I like spending it. I like saving it. I like most about it is giving it and having it available to help other people and build foundations and move out and do different things that have a greater impact on the world. That's my biggest joy around money. But money brings me great joy because it's not the dollars that bring me the joy. It's what I can do with it that brings me joy. So people have these different myths out there that that money will buy you happiness. I suggest to you that couldn't be further from the truth, that I don't sit here as Mary Jo Hilliker saying, I'm happy because I have money. I sit here, I'm going to tell you, I have money because I'm happy. My joy has attracted the money to me. Money never will bring me joy, ever. And that goes to be true with people in our society. You can look at people with money who are totally miserable. Some of the wealthiest people in our world were totally miserable people. So money doesn't bring in happiness. Happiness, you know, you start with the premise of having happiness and joy and understanding that in your heart and watch how you move forward and transform your relationship with money. And how the attraction factor starts happening for you, because it will happen for you. But it's if you're angry and you're irritated and you have scarcity and you think not enough and you have fear and all these predispositions and belief systems around money and it's scary to you, you're not going to attract it because it's all based on a negative whole set of paradigms that are just going to bring you more grief than goodness. So understanding that is so crucial to lay the foundation to be the attractor factor out of what we saw in the Secret. The next part of the outline talks about what did we learn in our education about money? What did, you know, traditional education, if you look at traditional education, you look at going to school, and what did you learn about money? You know, we didn't get taught. There's not a class in our schooling that teaches us about money, how to be good money managers, what money does for you, what it can do, what it can't do, what it is, the making money, managing money, all that stuff. We didn't learn that. You know, we didn't talk about getting, you know, time. What we learned in our education process was historical facts and figures, like what I said earlier when I talked to my dad, and he said, you know, go out and get a good job and earn a good living and work hard, and you'll never, you know, and that's what my dad did. He worked hard all his life. He was an engineer, and he worked hard. His company went out of business after hours, you know, and he had a little pension fund that he got. But the reason my dad accrued, this is an incredible story. The reason my dad had the money he had at the time of his death had more to do with when he was first diagnosed with Alzheimer's in 1990. I went in there and I took a power of attorney and I took over his account. So I took all of his assets. I had to first find them all. He had them everywhere. He had invested in all sorts of different silly things all over the place. And I took all of that and aggregated it and I started investing it. And it was through the 1990s that his small net worth multiplied by over 400%. But it was the managing of money. So my dad and himself in his whole life, he never realized any kind of financial wealth. But it was more because of lack of management skills than it was because he was a saver and he did his little thing. But again, he worked hard and did that. But it didn't get him anywhere in terms of Alice Chalmers. He lost his job. There's no security there. So you can see that we rely on a lot of these old-time principles work hard, get a good living. I'm going to talk to some of you people about Manatech. I think there's some people on this call today that work really, really hard at Manatech, and they are not making very much money. I see them every day. I even saw them down in Cancun. These are the people that won the incentive trip. They work really, really hard. They sign up tons of people, but they don't make very much money. And you can say, well, that means network marketing doesn't work, Mary Jo. I said, no, no, no. It means you're not working network marketing the right way. Just going out and signing up tons of people is not going to get you where you need to be. It's how you grow as a person in the process of getting there. Some of those major enrollers in our company have horrific relationships with money. When I talk to them about money, they do the same thing. They go into scarcity, they go into fear, they go into greed, they go into all those things, and I'm just like, oh my gosh. You know, I can see it. It's so clear. It's like black and white to me. You are so stuck. You got to get rid of that. You got to free yourself up. You got to release those belief systems. Void them from your brain. Don't listen to that little voice. Because abundance is at your fingertips. But you have to believe it. You have to come to grips with it. And it doesn't matter where you are financially today. It doesn't matter. I've seen people $500,000 in debt, and 6 months later, they've paid it all off. And they were out of a job at the time I met them. Robert Kiyosaki himself, he was over $1 million in debt, and he said, I got to do something different. Business went belly up. I've got to do something different. 2 years later, he was a millionaire. 3 years later, a millionaire. I mean, it's just about an attitude we have in relationship to money. So many people could go in the doldrums about it. But we got to look at what those attitudes are. The old attitudes are gone. This whole concept of changing time for dollars, you know, all those kind of things are gone. That's old-time thinking. So when you get in your head, you go, oh, my gosh, I'm going to go out and get a job and exchange time for dollars. Well, that's great. You can do that. But is that going to give you security? Is it a known? Yeah. So where does it put it in? It puts it in your comfort zone. It gets you right smack back in your comfort zone. So if that's comfortable for you and you want to stay in your comfort zone, so going out and working a job and being miserable and never fulfilling the purpose you feel laid on your heart, I don't know. Do you call that comfortable? I don't call it comfortable because inside I'm being eaten away and I'm being robbed of my ever-beingness of what I want to create. But I can't say I'm being robbed because I'm going to tell you that who's robbing you? There's only one person that robs you of that, and that's you yourself. It's choices you make that create your better tomorrow. And your relationship with money are critical around what your tomorrow looks like. So look at some of the new thoughts on prosperity and abundance that come out of Dale Carnegie and Earl Nightingale, Tony Robbins, of course, Kiyosaki, one of our famous ones of our time, for talking about relationships with money. And he is so calm around all of this monetary stuff. It doesn't matter whether he's multimillionaire or he's lost millions of dollars. It's all about relationship with money, that money works for him. He doesn't work for it. So what does that boil down to? It boils down to telling us, as the last part of that outline, is that we, the people, are responsible for our own empowerment. We're responsible for empowering ourselves around that whole concept of money. Education's not enough. You can go to read books and all this kind of stuff, and that helps. But all the, you know, reading how everybody makes money and how-to books, that's out there everywhere. But it's going to always go back to the beginning premise of where's your belief system? Believing in you as a person, believing in your ability. Because we take our value around money, and somehow if we didn't make money, if I took a poll on this call, I bet you there are a lot of you that sit back and go, well, Mary Jo, I never made very much, so I'm not worth very much. And let me suggest that couldn't be further than the truth. I mean, it's so far off base, that thinking. I call it stinking thinking. What you've made in your life has no correlation for what your worth is. Because money doesn't determine your worth. So don't ever let that ever sit back and be a restriction on your ability to see yourself for who you are and the greatness that's within you. I'm coaching a gal right now in my family coaching foundation. And she was really stuck. And I got her on one of my coaching sessions. I said, here's your assignment. I want you to go and write up for me, but more for you than for me. Write up, here are the reasons I love, and then her name. I said, I want you to tell me what you love about you. What are the reasons you love you? And that was very hard for her. She started crying just when I even said those words. Why did she cry? Because I don't think she ever thought about loving herself in the last 15 years of her life. But there isn't a person on the face of the earth that doesn't see goodness within them. If you open up the possibility and allow them to honor that within themselves, watch what happens. And the neat thing about this whole experience around this lady was that she was in a horrific job, you know, a lot of bad things happening. And over the next 2 to 3 weeks, after she wrote all the reasons she loved herself, and she saw the inconsistency of all those things with her work environment, she took the step of quitting her job, which wasn't really supporting her in the first place, but she'd been in it for years and years because, you know what? It was her comfort zone. It was her comfort zone. It was there. It was giving her something. What it was doing was robbing her of total self-esteem, but she didn't see that because it was part of her comfort zone. She quit her job. She got a little panicky about it because you could see the uneasiness around it. But I go off to Cancun. I come back. I had a session with her yesterday, and she has this incredible opportunity that, as she calls it, came out of nowhere. And I say, you know what? Have faith. Have faith. And she starts tomorrow. And she's so excited and she's so empowered. And it's again, we stay stuck. But we have to have the belief in ourselves. We got to get down to core belief in ourselves. So what a great exercise for everybody to do is just sit down and take a piece of paper and say, all the things I love about me, and make a list of those things. And then look at your life. Are you living all those things you love about you? And if not, why not? And then make a directional move. And a lot of it's going to be around that issue, the belief systems you have around money. So knock those out of your life. Because a lot of people don't believe they deserve. If I did that on this call, I'd get a lot of you say, well, Mary Jo, I don't deserve prosperity or abundance. And I think that you need to understand the definition of prosperity and abundance as it relates to money. And let me give you some, I'll give you some definition that I came up with on it and I found, and I really like this. If you want to take money as a concept, because you need the relationship. How does money relate to prosperity, and how does prosperity relate to abundance? Money is a means of exchange. We've already done that. We've talked about it. It's energy in the form of coins or wampum or paper as currency. Gold and silver have the value too, and you can exchange that. But really, it's the paper only represents the value, right? It's a piece of paper. And money only has the power that we as human beings give it. Many give it lots of power. Others give it little or no power. Money is a concrete concept, much more concrete than abundance and prosperity, because you can touch it and see it and feel it, and you can accumulate it, put it in an account, you can see what your balance is. So you have this, and that's what causes us to have this extended relationship with it, because it's much more concrete for us. The word prosperity means flourishing and thriving. Okay, so money is a means of exchange. Prosperity means flourishing and thriving. Most people will equate prosperity with the concept of good fortune, success, and affluence, like the good things in life. The energy behind prosperity has a greater flow to it than money, because money is just, again, paper. It kind of stops right there. It stops. We build programs around it, but it doesn't have any of its inert energy. The word prosperity, when you say that out loud, it tends to resonate and send its own vibration. It tends to It is a feeling of goodness. It's a feeling of, like I said, success, good fortune, affluence. So that's what we define as prosperity. And then the next word is what we call abundance. Abundance is what? Abundance is the overflowing supply, fullness. It's like the infinite source of unlimited, you know, it's beyond human comprehension. It's a wellspring, always available, a life-giving energy. Abundance resonates with words and ideas like joy and love and wisdom, because we talk about it even scripturally. We talk about how the Lord covenants with us our abundance of love and joy and wisdom, and it's just endless. It has an endless stream to it. But you can't see or feel abundance, can you? You can only see the manifestations of what abundance does in your life. So it becomes more of a spiritual principle. It becomes a principle that is like a faith principle that we can't touch or feel, but we can experience it on a daily basis because it's part of our spirituality. So we get those meanings of money versus prosperity and abundance. And we need to move forward with our concepts of prosperity and abundance. Our deserving prosperity and abundance is a given. It's a given. Because it's not about deserve, it's about a covenant the Lord's given us of prosperity and abundance. And notice how when we think about these terms, if we think we don't deserve them, what do we create in our lives? We create lack and scarcity. So the concept here is really that you're all one thought away from success or one thought away from failure. It's what is your thinking? And our thinking is just a matter of choices we make every day of our life. We make choices about what that thinking is. So are we going to choose onto clarity and get a perspective of prosperity and abundance, or are we going to stay stuck in our scarcity mentality around money? Not a hard decision to make, but truthfully, many of us choose to stay stuck because it gets back to that comfort zone that we're in. Comfortable. And fear is a big issue for us around our dreams and objectives and money. Most people can't, this is interesting to me, most people can't even define what they're truly afraid of. They feel fear, but they can't quantify it. They have a hard time grabbing onto what it is. They're just fearful. I think the big one out there is change. And money is a big issue around change because that's, you know, the reason you don't change jobs is because of money. See how money's controlling you. The reason you don't strike out and do things that really fulfill your purpose is because of fear. Fear of what? Fear of lack of money. So we have all this. So fear quashes and overrides our dreams and our objectives, and that robs us. We need to get rid of fear out of our life, and that's clearly scriptural as well. We should have no fear. The only valid fear in Scripture is that we fear the Lord. And it's not a fear of being afraid. It's a fear of awe, that we have incredible awe and honor. So no other fear is valid. False expectations appearing real. Get them out of your life. And there's some great books. I gave you Susan Jeffers' book. She has a couple of them out there. They're just terrific for people that carry fear. It's a great way to just, you know, get rid of it, release it from your life. Because if you carry it, you're going to create it. There's a great statement out there, what you resist persists. And it's absolutely true. Absolutely true. Yep. And that's what causes so many of us to have so many problems around money, because we spend our life, instead of our life in pursuit of abundance and focusing on abundance and wellness in the direction, we get preoccupied with overcoming sickness, right? Rather than focusing on wellness, we become preoccupied with overcoming sickness. Do you ever see people out there? I know you'll talk about people and you go, oh man, Mary Jo, every time I'm around this woman, all she does is talk about her illness. And I go, got it. Because her focus is on overcoming sickness. Her focus is on that sickness. Then there are other people that have tremendous illnesses, but you know what? They walk this earth in joy and love and shower people with just phenomenal things. No matter what they are going on in their life, because their focus is on what? Wellness and abundance, not on sickness and poverty. So look at yourself and say, where's my focus today? If you're fearing the credit cards and you're fearing this and you're worrying about the next dollar coming in the door, where's your focus? I'm going to tell you it can't possibly be on abundance. You're focusing on poverty. And when you focus, it's that whole concept. What you resist persists. What you focus on will become your reality or keep being your reality. So I can't imagine these quote-unquote comfort zones have any comfort to them, but they're known zones, and that's what keeps us stuck instead of moving forward. So we need to release the fear. We need to adopt abundance as a natural beingness, as a spiritual beingness. And the power of your thoughts will create that abundance for you. At that point, then money will empower you and not deprive you when you come from abundance, no matter how much money you have or don't have. So we look at moving forward in our lives. We need to move forward with confidence. It requires us to think and plan and you know, just be aware. Sure, we're in challenging situations. Today, we couldn't be in all great. I mean, our country's putting us all in a challenge. And I can't blame the country. We did it to ourselves. We as a society made horrifically bad decisions in many different industries. And we're paying the price today that's overwhelming. So we have tough things. And I love it when people come to me and they share with me. They go, oh, Mary Jo, you know, I just lost my account. Went down $10,000 last month or two. And I just smile because, you know, mine's a decimal point different than that. I mean, more dramatic. And it doesn't faze me because it's all what? It's dollars. It's money. Money doesn't control me. It doesn't control my attitude. It doesn't have anything to do. It's just dollars. And we made them before. We'll make them again. It's not an issue that there's a limited supply out there. There's an unlimited supply of that. But I really feel and have empathy for people that are going through this period with just this devastation or heartfelt, you know, loss, when there is no true loss. It's a piece of paper. It looks different today than it looked a month ago, but you know what? 6 months from now, it'll look different than it looks today. But we want to get panicky and we want to control. Well, then I'm telling you, what are you focused on? Going back to that, what are we focusing on? We're focusing on poverty. We're focusing on lack. We're focusing on scarcity. We're allowing fear to enter our life. All the wrong mechanisms that will bind you and keep you stuck instead of focusing on what? Abundance. Keep our focus. Move forward with confidence. Focus on abundance. So the dichotomy that we see here between wealth and poverty is not merely an issue of distribution, but it's really an issue of what? Consciousness. It's an issue of consciousness. There's a great statement out there that I remember reading one time, and I don't know who the author is of it. Probably numerous people claim it, but they said, being broke is a temporary condition. Being poor is a state of mind. And that is so big. It gets back to that whole idea of wealth and poverty is not an issue of distribution, but it's one of consciousness. So walk your walk. Take your steps. When you get off the call today, you're going to go, I am wealthy. It has nothing to do with, you know, the exchange mechanism in our society. It has to do with your consciousness of abundance in your life. And start with that. That will bring you the joy and the happiness and the resolution and solutions to allow you to get whatever you want to achieve. But if you don't start with that, you don't have the foundation laid. So that's basically the outline for today. I did put in here a review of a book back from 2003. It's called The Soul of Money, Transforming Your Relationship with Money and Life by Lynn Twist. And I honestly want to tell you people, I don't usually recommend a book without reading it, and I haven't read this book, and I apologize for that. It was an old outline that I did back in 2003, and it's intriguing. I'm going to check my library to see if I bought it, because I suspect I did, but I just don't remember ever reading it. But I liked what the review was, so that's why I shared it with everybody. And it talks about, you know, what our relationship in terms of money and all the things that it does to us. And she dismantles a lot of this, the feelings of scarcity, guilt, and burden with the experiences of sufficiency, insufficiency, freedom. And so she dismantles this whole great lie of scarcity. And I think we have scarcity mentality prolific throughout our world. But she has three, there are three great myths, and she calls them toxic myths. One is that there is not enough. And that came out. That was the first response I got. Isn't that incredible? Today when I said, what do you guys think of when you think of money? The first person that got off and got off a hold said, not enough. Isn't that incredible? Not enough. Okay, so a great myth on this law, in the great lie of scarcity. Like one of the toxic myths is there's not enough. The second toxic myth is more is better. Remember, money is just an exchange mechanism. Abundance is what you vie for. Abundance, prosperity, not money. And three, that's just the way it is. In other words, accepting your plight in life exactly where you are. In other words, never coming from possibility, living your life by probability, which is so overly burdensome for all of us and so wrong. So our relationship with money is not only the pathway to personal and financial freedom, but also key to transforming the condition of life, both physical and spiritual, for all of us in this 21st century. So what do we need to focus on? Abundance. And I gave you as the last page, I love this, and I'm going to read it to you as we close because I think it's so cool. It's called The Comfort Zone. You can actually take this page and put it up on your wall or something, but it really describes for us, because this is what locks so many people into exactly where their monetary plight is today, is the comfort zone concept. You heard it throughout the call today. But this one goes like this, the comfort zone. I used to have a comfort zone where I knew I could not fail. The same four walls of busy work were really more like a jail. I longed so much to do the things I'd never done before, but I stayed inside my comfort zone and paced the same old floor. I said it didn't matter that I wasn't doing much. I said I didn't care for things like diamonds, furs, and such. I claimed to be so busy with the things inside my zone, but deep inside I longed for something of my own. I couldn't let my life go by just watching others win. I held my breath and stepped outside to let the change begin. I took a step and with a strength I'd never felt before, I kissed my comfort zone goodbye and closed and locked the door. If you are in a comfort zone afraid to venture out, remember that all winners were at one time filled with doubt. A step or two and words of praise can make your dreams come true. Go greet your future with a smile. Success is there for you. Great, great poem. So take that out and put it on your wall. Take the step. Manatech might be it for you. Maybe it's not, but I think it's an incredible opportunity for all of you to reach the abundance and see that prosperity in your life and really achieve your dreams. Don't walk away from them. Don't give up on them, but go after them. Okay, people, that's it. Anyone have any last minute? Oh, Lydia brought me a correction to our Monday night. She's now saying we have an ICANN prospecting webinar tonight at 7 p.m. So there's no ICANN, no support calls. Lydia's getting straight with how she's planning my life now. I will send out an email to correct all this too. But understand we're not going to do then tonight the calls. She has me on a webinar tonight, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. ICANN prospecting webinar. So it's for the standard ICANN program, which is get one each month for 12 months, and you're on your way, or you're going to make presidential if you get your people underneath you to do the same thing. Find one who gets one. And you can register for that on ICANN2.net, our standard website for the ICANN Basic Program. Not the OSALINE, but the ICANN Basic Program. So that's what we're doing tonight, people. Sorry for the misinformation. And we will send out an email confirming that with all of you. Okay. Love you guys. Any last-minute comment? Did you learn anything about yourself in today's call about money?
Great Joel, could I ask you to complete a statement?
Sure.
You said being broke is a temporary condition. Being poor is...
a state of mind.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Notice the difference, right? A temporary condition you can get out of. A state of mind is very difficult.
Yeah.
So you looking at your life today. If you're broke today, big deal. It's just a temporary condition. And that's exactly the way you look at it. If you view yourself as poor, man, you got a big problem. Because now you're letting it control your mind. You've fallen into that belief system of being poor. You're not poor. You're abundant beyond all imagination. It's just temporarily right now you're in a situation where you may not have cash. Change that, okay?
Thank you.
You bet. Anyone else?
Great, great call.
There you go. Hit home run ball, huh?
Yeah.
We could use one of these almost each week, couldn't we? Just to get our mind back on track, right? Because we do get caught with all this stuff out there, don't we? I know. It's just a blessing to leave it, you know, lay it down at your feet, walk over it, trample it, never to be there again. I'm not letting that stuff control me. It's not part of my belief system. So toss it out, throw it out, move forward. Okay. All right, everybody.
Hey, when you were talking,
go ahead. Oh, anyone else?
Yeah, when you were talking about your family, it's like we lived in the same house.
That sounds like Tony, is it?
It is, yeah.
Anyway, you bet. I know, and you know what? It's true about, if I ask that same question, probably 75% of the people on this call, because so many of us are in that baby boomer era, and we had that same kind of upraising with our parents, you know, real very tight income, very tight cash flow, just everything was just nickels and dimes. We saved each of the pennies. Man, it was penny pinching. You know, it was incredible. It was just, yeah. And my chocolate chip cookie story is also invaluable, which is on the ICANN website.
Another, you make me laugh just thinking back about it all. It's exactly the same.
There you go. Yeah, right. My mother made those chocolate chip cookies, man. She waited till they were all laid out on those trays before she took out the morsels and put one chocolate chip in each cookie. Ay, ay, ay.
How about you want something? Well, you just had your birthday. You wait a year.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. There was no such thing because we couldn't afford it. It was all about can't, not enough, not, ay, ay, ay. Amazing. But you can break away from that, people. It's not who you are. It's just how some programs have developed in your life. So you can reject them, and you should reject them and come from abundance. All right. Love you guys. Have a great week. We'll talk next Monday.